overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Gentle sound of the bell. We discover the sound of silence. My prayer partner in Victoria, British Columbia, said it was snowing this morning when we spoke. And I said, listen to the sound of the snow. And he smiled. And he said, you can hear it ever so gently landing. And so what if we could allow our minds to be like the gentle falling snow? Discovering that spacious field of silence. That is peaceful. Expansive, loving, and devoid of thought patterns, for now. It's like an empty canvas. And we have the freedom to make this canvas all cluttered with thoughts and concerns and beliefs and ideas, and or we can leave it empty for just a brief period of time. And realize that we're always a choice point. It says in the Bible, choose you this day who you will serve. Are you going to serve God, or are you going to serve the chaos? The worldly concerns. It's not that one is right and the other is wrong. But each one of us has the capacity to respond to life in a way that might be more skillful as we grow and evolve on this spiritual journey. It was Epictetus, the Greek philosopher, that said, it's not so much what happens to us in life that matters, but rather how we respond to what happens. And so we realize that we have the challenge, responsibility, and opportunity to meet what life brings us. Not seeing it as a problem, but truly seeing it as a gift. This Sunday I'm going to speak about the energy of hope. It says in the Bible that faith is the evidence of things hoped for. And so we get to undress this vibrational something called hope. Is it an emotion? Is it a thought pattern? Is it neither? Is it both? Is it an energy of possibility? Queen Elizabeth spoke yesterday. She's 95 years old. And she ended her talk by saying, and the hopes and fears of all these years are met in thee tonight. She closed her talk by saying, and the hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. And so the invitation is to discover that ineffable something that embraces the hope and the fear. It was years ago that I was at Ghost Ranch, and I was doing a process with Jean Lang, and we were to face the obstacles, the sufferings, the challenges that we both intimately experienced. And then we were to find some glimmer, something to redirect our consciousness, and both Jean and I found the word hope. And we took back to Huntsville this essential hope, this energy of hope. Not a place in Arkansas that produces Bill Clinton, but a vibration within the soul that would have us discover meaning, truth, and kindness within and around us. It is a time for hope on this planet. A hope for our country, a hope for the planet itself, with global warming, a hope for some of the vanishing species on the planet that are challenged right now, hope for the human species that it might awaken to its oneness and move from hopelessness into hopefulness. And it all starts with us. So we come here to expand that field of consciousness, first locally, and then all around, knowing that we contagion the world with our consciousness. So I invite you to breathe into that spacious field that knows no other, and exhale from that field. And when you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes and to be here now on this day after Christmas, December 26th. I'm sitting here with my friend, the penguin, my spirit animal. He's such a wise little guy. He knows how to play. He knows how to nurture. He knows how to celebrate diversity. Is he a bird or is he a fish? Or is he a little of both? Every now and then I'll watch a documentary from Antarctica, and they show them clustering on their vanishing breeding spaces and how they're so nurturing to their eggs. They sit on the eggs, and he'll sit on the egg and she'll sit on the egg. How could we consider them in any way inferior? You know, when you begin to see life through a penguin's eyes, you know, they know how to play. They know how to, they're like acrobats in the water and yet clumsy on the land. And that an intelligence could create such a being as a penguin. I was sharing with the revealing service, they had a thing about Australia and how the fires have come back to Australia. And they were massive fires last year, and they've come back again this year, and the koala bears are compromised. And so I found myself watching the koala bears with tears coming down my eyes, saying, could I be hopeful for one of them? That maybe we'll plant some eucalyptus trees so that they have a place to escape. They said usually the fires were underbrush fires, but now they're consuming the eucalyptus trees, and those things kind of just go up like that, and that's where they take refuge. And so a part of me was sad, but another part of me was hopeful. And so anytime I do a talk, and this is on the energy of hope, I invite the universe to show me what is the truth about hope. And why would Jean and I find hope to be the one thing that we left Ghost Ranch with? I went to my book of wisdom. It's called Words of Wisdom to Live By, an encyclopedia of wisdom, thinking maybe that'll provide me with an answer. And I looked up hope, and it said, there is no medicine like hope. There's no incentive so great and no tonic so powerful as an expectation of something tomorrow. The sun'll come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that, well, there will be sun. It is hope that maintains most of mankind. So I steer my bark with hope in the lead, leaving fear astern, knowing that hope springs eternal. So hope has something to do with tomorrow. I hope we can get our act together on planet Earth before we become the next great mass extinction. I mean, that literally is not something that we can be flippant about, because if we as a species don't recognize the interconnectedness, that we're all connected, that it's one life. When Ernest Holmes says there is one life, that life is God's life. He doesn't say exclude the koalas and the penguins. So when you recognize everything as part of this divine life, well, then we are not here to take dominion over this planet. Dominion comes from the word dominus, which means God. So we're here to recognize that God is everywhere in the universe. Then we bow to the koala bears and we listen to them. And we say the penguins are sacred. They are their brothers and sisters. And then we humans get to find a way to get along with each other. I hope we can get along. I remember when Rodney King was beaten, we were at the other church, and I quoted him on Sunday when he says, "Can't we all get along with each other?" And I had some church people storm out of the church because I had quoted Rodney King. And I thought, And I remember Kennedy Schultz used to say, "You're not here to comfort the afflicted, David. You're here to afflict the comfortable." And so when Rodney King says, "Can't we all get along, the whites and the blacks?" That's a question I still ask myself. Can't we all get along as a species on this planet? And to own our own dysfunctional way of being on the planet? Jean Ann asked a beautiful question. She says, "Can I accept somebody that I don't understand?" Now, isn't a question like that just absolutely exquisite? I don't understand hate. I don't understand the God of hate. My daughter Terry said, "How could I worship a God that will kill off everybody on the planet and give us a rainbow?" I don't understand that kind of a God that can love the sinner and hate the sin. You know, that's what I was raised with an angry, righteous, self-righteous God. And that's not a God that I would ever... You know, I remember saying that this would be the one profession I would never do was ministry, because I had the old God that I was supposed to. But then I realized I could find a new God. And then I hear Meister Eckhart says you have to kill God to know God. And what he's saying is you kill the idea, the belief, in this wrathful despot, and you begin to discover something as intimate and ubiquitous as God revealing herself through a penguin or a koala bear or a flower or a tree. This beautiful planet is an expression of the one. And then it gives me hope that we can evolve and we can begin to see things with new eyes. So in this month of December, I love exploring a deeper truth. And so I'm exploring the idea of drinking from the river of light. And you know, it's all light. It's all light and it's all love. And so when you're drinking from the river of light, where are you going to drink? And the first week I talked about the life of expression. And I quoted that famous poem that says there is a thread that is woven out through all creation, and this thread never leaves us. And things come and go, but this thread is eternal. So what if that is the thread of light, the thread of awareness, the thread of love? And it's always there. And we can trust and have faith that even when everything seems to be chaotic and falling away out here, there is that which will never leave us or forsake us. And it's the life of that one presence expressing itself endlessly anew. It never stopped speaking. Someone gave me a mug for Christmas, and it's a quote by Emily Dickinson. And to paraphrase it, it says, "Always stand guard and allow the passageway from your soul from the exquisite revelation of truth." So in this soul that we are, we're a soul with a body, an eternal soul, stand guard at the entranceway for the revelation of hope, for the revelation of divine expression. The second week I explored the idea of seeing with new eyes. We're going to be doing a class, and I probably should do a little announcements. The class will be starting on the first Wednesday in January, and it's based on the book Awakening the World by Llewellyn Von Lee. He wrote it in 2006. I was not ready, evolved enough to teach it at that time, but now it's what I ache to teach, because he said, it's not enough for the individual to awaken, the world has to awaken, the planet has to awaken, the anima mundi, the soul of the world. It's all sentient. And when we see it with different eyes, it has the potential to awaken. So the invitation from the get-go is we have to be able to see the world with the eyes of oneness, not with the eyes of the separate self. And when you do, he says, literally, you bow to everything. It's all part of you. So that's going to start in the first week in January on Wednesday mornings. And there's a sign-up sheet. Next Friday morning at 6 a.m., we're doing the World Peace Meditation. The reason it's at 6 a.m., for those of you who question it, it's because it's done at the same hour all over the planet. It was started in 1984 in Greenwich, England, noon Greenwich time, which would be 7 East Coast time, 6 o'clock our time, 4 a.m. California time. I think if you're in Hawaii, you'd get up at 2 a.m. But whatever it is, we gather for 1 hour, and I found the World Peace Prayer, and we'll be doing it here at 6, and it's for 1 hour. I'm not going to provide you with breakfast, but Jean Ann is going to bring in these beautiful orange rolls that someone gave me, way too many to eat. So she's going to heat them, so there'll be a little sweet roll out there for you to take in as nourishment. And we get to lend our consciousness to this idea of peace on planet Earth. Now, you know, Jesus says, when two or more are gathered in my name, I am there. So when we come together as a community to support something bigger, we potentiate that peace on planet Earth. And we do our small bit to expand that consciousness. Last week, I talked about the web of connection and that we're all connected in this beautiful tapestry called life. It's one life, remember? Each of us is a thread in that web. There's a thing called the butterfly effect that says if you do something over here in Huntsville, Alabama, it affects people all over the planet. So what if we could take seriously the impact that we're creating on planet Earth? You know, that's why it's so good to think positive thoughts and to be kind to one another. And so this Sunday, I'm exploring this idea of hope. And, you know, you Google up hope and you're going to get all kinds of talks and music. And I watched 2 TED Talks yesterday. One was from a young man from Cambodia. And he was raised after the Khmer Rouge, where they literally killed millions of Cambodians. So he said, as a small child, I'm in a country that I love dearly, but they're slaughtering my people. His mother didn't have enough money to feed him. The father ran off. So the mother dropped him off at the monastery, and he became a monk, a Buddhist monk, for 19 years. And while he was a monk, he contracted malaria. But they didn't have money for him to get the medication for malaria. So he said, at a young age, I felt that the life force was leaving me, and I was truly in a hopeless place. And then a nun, one of the Buddhist nuns, she says, don't worry about the money, I'll take care of it. And he said, in that holy, kind act of this nun, he got the medication, he overcame the malaria, and he says, from that moment on, he says, that little bit of hope that she gave me through a simple act of kindness changed my life. Now he's left the monastery, he's probably in his 30s, and he has a foundation called the Life and Hope Foundation in Cambodia. And he says they're helping girls go to school. They're helping people that don't have food. And he says all because of a kind act that gave him hope to survive. Now he has this Life and Hope Foundation spreading in Cambodia to assist others just through a kind act. It spawned itself. So after watching his little testimony, I went to another TED Talk, and this one was in Sydney, Australia, and this was a woman that said, hope saved my life. And so she had a young daughter, 5, and a little boy, 2, and the daughter has a disease, what's it called? Batten's disease, Batten's disease, never heard of it, a rare genetic disease they discovered when the little girl was 5. And she's now gone blind, she's gone deaf, she can't walk, she has seizures all the time, and there's no cure for it. And so the mother was bereft and helpless and hopeless for the daughter, and then she realized, if I can just create the time she has left and give her quality of time, and so little acts of kindness, a hug from a stranger, a smile from a friend who who say, I can be there with you. She said, I found that I have hope to navigate as my little girl goes through this period. And so she created the Batten Foundation. They got funding from people. They're now exploring this rare genetic disease that 1 in 1 million children have it. The little boy, she says, thank God, does not have the genetic thing that the little girl has. But in the meantime, the quality of my time with my daughter has become so sacred that I just cherish it. So she said, I went from a place of being totally hopeless to now where I have hope again, that I can navigate today, that she can smile today, that I can hold her in my arms today. I don't have to remedy the situation. It doesn't have to all work out the way I want it to work out in order for us to have a quality of life. And so as I was watching that, I saw in the news yesterday, hope comes to Kentucky. You know, when you want to tune into hope, it starts showing up. Hope comes to Kentucky, and they had the first responders going to that ravaged, tornadic areas, those towns, and showing up as Santa Clauses and bringing gifts to these kids that don't even have a Christmas tree, they don't have a house, but Santa's showing up and giving them toys and things. And, you know, and this man said, we don't have a house, we have each other. And he says, but you've given me hope to go on. You've given me hope to rebuild. So what if hope springs eternal once we just open to this possibility? Yeah, everything's gone to hell in a handbasket, but life goes on, and we get to pick up the pieces and to see where we go. Christmas Eve day, Trey and I were trying to get in the Christmas spirit, so we were going to go out and buy for Christmas Eve dinner, and the car needed gas, and so we pull into Costco, and the lines were huge. I mean, we must have waited 15 minutes to get to the front of the line. And when we got to the front of the line, and you know, patience is the last step to enlightenment, enough said. So by the time we got to the front of the line, Trey gets out to put gas in the car, and the gas cap won't open. Now, this had happened once before in Tennessee, and we had to rip the gas cap off. So he's screaming at me, do something, David, and I go back, and the gas cap won't open. So all the people behind us were upset, and we had only, on the meter says, you have only 30 miles left in your car. So we were really low on the gas. He pulls out of the gas station. We stop the car in the middle of the Costco parking lot. It was packed with cars. It was Christmas Eve, you can imagine. And all of a sudden, a woman pulls up. Can I help you? And she jumps out of her car. Her car is still running. And she says, you two old men are having a difficult time with your gas cap. So she gets in the car and she tries to figure if there's a button to push. There was no button to push. She says, is the key in the ignition? I said, it's one of those smart cars that doesn't have an ignition. You have the key in your pocket. So then a truck pulls up from behind and it's a man says, do you need some help with your gas cap? So here he's trying to figure it out and she's trying to figure it out and nothing was figured out. Oh, she went on her computer. She's Googling, how do you open a gas cap on a Golf Volkswagen thing? And they showed this thing and this and nothing worked. So Trey said, go into Costco and get what we need and I'll stay here with the car. So I go into Costco and the lines were huge for two items, toilet paper and something else. And I'm waiting in this long line and long line and long line. And then when you get out of Costco, you have to go through the long line where they look at your receipt for toilet paper. And I get out of there and he says, we're going home. We don't have many miles left on the car. So we go home. He's called the Volkswagen dealership. They can't see him for a week. You know, it was one of those no hope, felt hopeless with the car. And we get home and he Googles up. You know, you can find everything on Google. There's 500 remedies to fixing the gas cap on Google. Finally, someone said, lock the car and unlock the car. And he's not really technical, but he unlocks and locks the car. All of a sudden, the gas cap pops open. It popped open. I said, don't ever shut it again. Once it's open, if we shut it, we'll never get it open. Little things like that give you hope that tomorrow, the sun will come out tomorrow. We put gas in the car. We went back to Costco. We didn't close the gas cap. It's now full. He's going to go to the fix-it place next week. And all because of a good Samaritan somewhere along the way took pity on two old men in a parking lot with a gas cap. See, if you just tune in, Adam said this morning in our revealing service, you get glimpses of the divine that shows up when you least expect it. So, finding hope in Kentucky. I got a phone call from Bubba Jake up there in Wyoming, and he's moved out there with his dog, Maisie. He's 30 years old. He's got a very high-energy dog. And I said, what you doing, Bubba Jake? He says, I'm out skiing. He says, all the snow has come down. And he says, Maisie and I were cross-country skiing and she's running next to him. And he said, I've read this book that you have to read, David. He said,
It gives me so much hope for the future.
Well, there's hope again. And I said, what book is this, Jake? And he said, it's all about the Kali Yuga, which is a period of time in history. They talk about it in Hinduism, when there was a dark energy on the earth. And we've just come out of the Kali Yuga, where humanity has been in a dark place, patriarchal religion, them and us, a really dark phase. But he says, now consciousness is emerging from the Kali Yuga into a whole new way of perceiving, where we no longer perceive from the separate self, from the belief systems, but we almost telepathically can tune into one another. Even intergenerational, interspecies can connect. Have you ever had a communion with your dog? Yeah, he nods his head. So what if, once we leave the Kali Yuga, there's hope for an expanded field of consciousness on planet Earth? Well, the time is now. We need a new consciousness. We need a consciousness that embraces the dark so that we can heal the dark. You know, I've spent 32 years doing ministry, and it comes down to a simple idea. There's an awakening that happens within the individual. But first of all, we have to go within and heal the dark stuff. We have to integrate the dark stuff. Terry did a burning bowl ceremony the other day, and they do it at the end of the year. We've done it for years, where you burn away the stuff that you want to release. But what's really most important now that I know is that you integrate the stuff that you're trying to release. So fear is there. You don't get rid of fear, you integrate fear. You make friends with fear. You learn to respond with fear. And then fear will still arise, anxiety will still arise, but you're not trying to be a fearless so-and-so. You're trying to be someone who can face the anxiety in life, who can face the confusion in life. And then when confusion comes, and these are confusing times, have no doubt about it. Well, then when confusion arises, where is the clarity amidst the confusion? And then you become a whole integrated being. So it's all a gift for us from the universe, all of it. Not just the happy stuff, but even the unhappy stuff. And then we're bringing the light to the darkness. So first there's this thing that wakens within us, then we have to go and heal the dark stuff, and then this is the third phase, and this is where we find ourselves now. We awaken outwardly into the world, into this connection. And you know, you begin to realize you're having a conversation with yourself everywhere. When you have a conversation with the tree, it's you as the tree having a conversation with itself. When you see the koala bear and he's looking at you with those little eyes, that's your child, not just the two-leggeds. I remember Gigi, it gave me hope the other day. Gigi, I was walking through Twickenham, and in the middle of the road was a possum. And I told the possum to get out of the road because people tear down the streets and he could lose his life. And he was such a cute, Gigi rescued a bunch of baby possums and raised them, so she's a possum mama. Anyway, so I got the possum out of the street. He ran into one of those big mansions under the hedges, and I was concerned for him. And this woman said, what are you doing over there? And I said, well, I'm trying to make sure the possum's okay, because I want him to be okay. And she said, oh, possums are such wonderful critters. They eat the ticks, don't you know that? I said, no, I didn't know that possums ate the ticks. Well, she was informing me the gift of possums. And I felt hope that even in Huntsville, Alabama, you can find a possum in the street. Trey and I were walking in Montesano, and we saw armadillos. Armadillos up on Montesano. I thought they had become extinct, and there was a little armadillo waddling down in the leaves. Little light things like that give me hope that we as a species haven't gotten rid of all of them. So, yeah, Bubba Jake called and told you about the gas cap thing. And Judy Graff gave me this book at Christmas. It was my birthday last year. And it's one of my all-time favorite things. If you want to get a gift for somebody that will open their heart, I sent one to my nephew, and he reads it with his niece. It's called The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse. And it's a story for a child, but it's really for all of us. It's a love story. It's a story of community. It starts off with this little boy who's all alone, who has no friends. And he meets a mole who has no self-esteem. And all of a sudden, the mole and the boy become like best friends. And as they're walking through the path of life, they encounter a fox who's trapped in a trap. He's doomed. And the little mole chews away the things that were holding the fox in bondage, and they free the fox. So now the fox, the mole, and the little boy are three all alone in this world trying to find their way, and they meet the old horse, the wise old horse. And the four of them create this community. And you know, we need community to get along. As Ruby says, we're here to walk each other home. So little books like this give me great hope. If these critters can do it. And at the end of this beautiful love story, when the little boy asks the horse, what is the strongest thing you can tell, the most courageous thing that you can tell me to say? And the horse said, help. And he said, that's the most courageous thing you can say? And he says, yes, because I'm willing to receive from another. It takes courage to receive from another. So here the four of them are making the way through this beautiful book of art and poetry. And it's handwritten in cursive writing, not just print. And at the end, they talk about what they've learned. And I thought I would use this as a launching pad for a closing today. So they get them. Try to do my third grade teacher. She used to do this with show and tell. So here's the boy, the horse, the fox, and the mole. They're sitting right there. And it says, what's your best discovery? Asked the mole to the other three. And the little boy says, that I am enough, Gene, just as I am. That's the one discovery that he made. So then we turn the page. Okay, and you see the horse, the little boy is on top of the horse, and you see them standing outside, and this is, I don't know who this one is. Oh, this is the mole. I've realized why we are here, whispered the boy. And then the mole says, for cake. Because the mole loved to eat. He had an eating addiction. And the boy said, no, to the mole. We're here to love. We're here to love and to be loved. And then the horse adds, no, we're here not just to love, but we're here to be loved. To be loved, to receive the love. Not just to give, but to receive. So they're all kind of feeding into the one voice, supporting one another. So now we have the horse kissing the boy and the thing. And they're all three lying on the ground together. What do we do when our hearts hurt? Asked the little boy. Well, we wrap them with friendship, shared tears and time, until they wake hopeful and happy again. We wrap them in friendship, shared tears, you know, I cry at the drop of a hat, and time, until they wake hopeful and happy again. Could we be hopeful and happy again by just being there with one another, discovering that we're enough just as we are, here to love and to be loved? Then it goes on to show the horse is speaking to the kids. He says, do you have any other advice? Asked the boy. And he's looking at the big old horse. And the horse says, well, don't measure how valuable you are by the way that you are treated by others, said the horse. You know, what other people think about you is none of your business. Don't give them power, you know. That's the horse's wisdom. And then the horse says, always remember you matter. You're important and you are loved and you bring to this world things that nobody else can. That who you are is enough, just as you are. You don't need to accomplish anything great. Just being you is enough. So then you see the horse walking away with the three right next to him and in color. Home isn't always a place, is it? The little boy and the mole and the fox are sitting on the horse. Home isn't a place, is it? Now you have the horse and the boy kissing. He says, thank you, because he woke up. And he says, the end, not the end. Look how far we've come, said the horse. And then at the end, he says, sometimes all you hear about is the hate in this world, but there is more love in the world than you could possibly imagine. So could we be hopeful that the love will conquer when the hate seems to be so prevalent, and that it starts with you and me? That hope springs eternal through the heart of the one that finds community and that can listen to one another. And Jean Ann's wearing a t-shirt that says, I am enough. Isn't that enough to know that you're enough? And to stand gateway when the voice of hope springs eternal, a man came to the center and he wrote a little book called The Hive. His name was Jerry Grubbs. He came down from Indiana and he dedicated the book to me for some reason because I was enthusiastic about his poetry. And I pulled this out yesterday and found a little poem of his. And I'm going to close with this poem. If Raul, if you want to go back to the bell. And I want you to feel the imagery that he gives. It's called Your Life. But remember, when I speak of your life, it's not your life as a separate individual. It's your life as a part of the one life. And he does a beautiful metaphor of a flower. And you know, I've always resonated with flowers. So what if you are a flower in the bouquet of life? If you are an expression of that one thing, could we listen lowly to that something that's flowering within us and with hope guiding us, let it motivate us through kindness into the unfoldment of how we can be in the world. Oh, I'm going to read this poem twice, and then I'm going to move into a closing meditation. Okay, close your eyes if you would. I want you to feel the one life breathing you. And this is what he called the poem, Your Life. He said, what is a flower other than the unending night blooming now in your chest with the texture of a dove and the yellow stamen shining like all the stars guiding you toward the fragrance of your life. Your life. What is a flower other than the unending night blooming now in your chest with the texture of a dove and that yellow stamen shining like all the stars in the universe guiding you toward the fragrance of your life? And so we bring our attention to the flower within our heart, metaphorically, that which is unfolding within us, illuminated by the light of the universe, soft like the dove, unveiling, unfolding with ease and grace, filled with hope about a brighter tomorrow, having touched that vibration this Sunday morning as we continue to drink from the river of light that offers itself everywhere to us. One light, God's light. It illumines the darkness within ourselves. We are a web of light, a web of love. The boy, the mole, the fox, and the horse. One life, nurturing itself, seemingly separate, but intertwined in a web of connection. Where we are here to nurture one another. And so we become this holding space for the universe. I invite you to continue to open and hear Epictetus' words again. It's not so much what happens to us, but how we respond to what happens to us. And so we get to respond in a hopeful way, in a loving way that says we are here to love and to be loved. We are here to know that we are enough, just as we are. We are here to be there for one another. Holding the high watch, so that when someone falls down, we become that hand that lifts the other up. And we see more clearly now. It's never been about me as an individual. It's always been about this light unveiling itself in us, around us, through us, as us. It's always been about this divine love through simple acts of kindness, helping someone out with a gas cap, knowing that when we are here for one another, we reap the blessing of that kindness. And one small kind act can generate hope for another human being, for another life form. If you've ever rescued an animal, that animal knows that it's been rescued by you. And it has such gratitude. And so we end this year with a hopeful heart, young Cambodian monk has a little formula that he created. And it's life plus hope equals change. Embracing the life that we've been given, even though it might seem hopeless or helpless, but we bring in hope and kindness, well, then we move into change. A responsive change, a proactive change. And we become what the world is looking for. Be the change you want to see in the world, said Gandhi. And so we get to open our hearts and let the fragrance of this presence begin to reveal itself as us. In our classroom, there is a sign that says, "Silence is your perfume." Could we take refuge in that silence, which is the language of God? And could we listen to the snowflakes as they fall, or the tree as it grows? In the language of silence, words are not necessary. Even the idea each other does not exist. And we meet there in this field of light and love, in this field of silence and hope, in this field of peace. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. And so we put them together, the hopes and the fears, and we bring them to the source, to the field of possibility that exists in every breath. And we know that the possibility of the universe emerges out of our quality involvement in the sacred moment. And so we allow this moment to be rich with hopeful possibility. We see the planet awakening to its sacredness. We see the animals becoming our teachers, the trees becoming our saints, the earth becoming our oracle of how to be in the world in harmony. We stand in awe of the ever-expressing gospel of good, true, and beauty within and all around. And we witness it, we remember it, which is our job. Behold, we are here to witness it, that which makes all things new. We are here to offer ourselves on the altar of transformation and have our own resurrection, our own rebirth into a new order of being here on planet Earth. This is the time, and we are the ones that we have been waiting for. As we leave the Kali Yuga, as we leave the dark era, and we awaken this new illumined space where the one life reveals herself endlessly anew, standing guard at the entryway of our soul to experience the mystery of belonging. I invite you to breathe into that heart space that's flowering within you. That compassionate love that sees no other. And let's say together, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the deepest aspect of the self.
You are the deepest aspect of the self.
Revealing herself to each one of us.
Revealing herself to each one of us.
As a thread of oneness.
Thread of oneness.
Deeply woven into our soul.
Deeply woven into our soul.
Here to mirror to each other.
Here to mirror to each other.
Our oneness.
Our oneness.
Our joy, our love, and our abiding peace. In this spaciousness, we are one. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you. In this place, we are one. Open your eyes. Feel the hope that springs eternal, that's guiding each one of us. Know that you arrived, you are home, and all is well. Thanks for sending in your tithes. World Peace Meditation, 6 a.m. Friday morning. Jean Ann will have the orange rolls for you, warmed up from the oven, and we will create peace on earth, goodwill toward all. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.